Welcome to the deep dive. We have a really custom tailored journey just for you today.
Yeah, we're pulling from a pretty dense, highly technical 2010 master's thesis.
Right, from the Pohang University of Science and Technology, the author is Sung Woo Seo.
And just to warn you, the title alone is a lot. It's called First Principles Calculations on Thermodynamic Properties and Magnetism of Kappa Carbide.
I know. It sounds incredibly dry. Like reading it kind of feels like staring into this massive wall of thermodynamic
Oh,
mathematics.
absolutely. It's intense.
But the mission of our deep dive today is actually entirely relatable. And honestly, it's massive in scale.
Right.
We are going to show you how shifting the geometric position of a single microscopic carbon atom dictates whether a family car cruising at 60 miles per hour survives a high-speed crash.
Or it completely shatters into a million pieces like a sheet of glass.
Exactly. It's a total shift in how we think about macro engineering.
Because, we're so used to thinking about safety in terms of thick steel I-beams or massive machine welds.
Things you can physically see.
Yeah, things you can hit with a heavy wrench.
Yeah.
But to actually build the super materials of the future, materials that make cars lighter, save massive amounts of fuel, protect the environment,
That wrench is just totally useless.
completely useless. You have to engineer safety down at the quantum level.
But before we even look at the quantum math, we kind of have to understand the real-world physical problem that's driving this whole thing.
Right, the highway problem.
Exactly. The global automotive and shipping industries are trapped in this desperate battle against weight. Because if you're hauling around thousands of pounds of heavy steel, you're obviously burning more gas.
You're emitting way more carbon into the atmosphere.
And you're just spending a lot more money at the pump, so we need lighter cars.
Which brings us to the overarching goal of this specific research. They are focused on slashing the density of automotive steel using this very specific alloy blend called FNLC.
Which stands for iron, manganese, aluminum, and carbon.
Right. And the stakes driving this metallurgical research, they're just incredibly high.
Because what did the data show? It was like a 20% weight reduction.
Yeah, you achieve a 20% weight reduction in your standard midsize car driving at 60 miles per hour. You yield nearly an 8% improvement in fuel economy.
Wow.
And when you scale that up over the lifespan of millions of vehicles globally, I mean, you are talking about a staggering reduction in global energy consumption.
So the aluminum in that mix, that's the magic ingredient for dropping the weight, right?
Essentially, yes. Aluminum is a significantly lighter element compared to iron.
But obviously, you can't just build a car chassis out of pure aluminum soda
No,
cans.
definitely not.
Because if you hit a pothole, the whole frame would just crumple.
Right. So metallurgists mix these elements together, and doing that creates a very specific structural compound inside the steel called kappa carbide.
Kappa carbide
And
up.
kappa carbide is really the foundational building block they're trying to perfect here, but it is a massive chemical tightrope walk. Well, when kappa carbide forms during the steelmaking process, its physical distribution changes everything. Like if it forms as these fine microscopic particles that are perfectly and evenly distributed throughout the steel.
Which is the goal.
Right. If that happens, it triggers something called a SIP effect. SIP. That stands for shear band induced plasticity.
Okay, I want to break down what that actually means for, the driver sitting inside the car.
Here.
Because when a material has plasticity, it basically means it can deform without breaking. But how do these shear bands actually absorb the crash?
Okay, imagine dropping a thick deck of playing cards onto a table.
Okay.
Instead of snapping in half, the individual cards slide over one another to absorb the kinetic energy of the impact.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, so microscopic shear bands in the metal act exactly like those sliding cards. They act as these atomic shock absorbers. The steel becomes incredibly ductile.
Bending and stretching to just soak up all that massive force.
Exactly. And it rivals the energy absorption of highly advanced, incredibly heavy TYT steels, but at a total fraction of the weight.
But you called it a tightrope walk. So what happens if the metallurgists, fall off the tightrope?
The material turns completely deadly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If the manufacturing process is slightly off, that kappa carbide grows too coarse, or it gathers and clumps up along the boundaries of the ferrite phases inside the metal.
So instead of sliding like a deck of cards,
Those hard clumps act as the starting points for devastating microscopic cracks. The second the car takes an impact, those cracks propagate at the speed of sound, and the steel violently shatters.
okay, let's unpack this for a second. So is this essentially like cholesterol in the human body?
That is actually a really good way to look at it.
Right, because a fine, evenly distributed amount of cholesterol keeps your cellular structure functioning perfectly. But if it clumps up in the wrong spots, like along the walls of your arteries,
It causes a catastrophic structural failure, heart attack. And if that atomic cholesterol builds up along the arteries of the steel, the grain boundaries, the entire vehicle suffers a catastrophic failure.
So because kappa carbide can literally either save the car or destroy it, material scientists can't really just rely on trial and error in a physical forge anymore.
No, it's way too risky and expensive. They have to zoom all the way down to the atomic level to map its architectural DNA and figure out its exact shape.
Which means we have to look at the crystal structure.
Right.
The thesis describes kappa carbide as having this E21 anti-perovskite crystal structure.
Which sounds like sci-fi jargon, I know.
It totally does. But to visualize this, just picture a microscopic cubic cage.
Yeah, a perfectly symmetrical, rigid little box.
Exactly. And on the eight exterior corners of this little box, you have your aluminum atoms.
Right.
Then, sitting flatly on the six faces of the box, you have your primary metals, which is a mix of iron and manganese atoms.
And then finally, trapped dead in the center of this cage, in what physicists call the octahedral site, is a single carbon atom.
And that trapped carbon atom is really the anchor of the entire system.
It is. But the real breakthrough concept of this thesis, it lies in how you arrange the bars of that cage.
Right, because in the specific high-performance compound they're studying, Fe2mNLC, you have identical atomic ingredients.
Exactly.
But there are three different geometric ways to arrange the metallic bars around that trapped carbon atom.
It's basically a microscopic Rubik's Cube.
Yes. Even if you have the exact same number of colored squares, rotating the faces changes the entire nature of the cube.
So true.
And the text labels these three possible arrangements as octa-1, octa-2, and octa-3.
Right, so in octa-1, the central carbon atom is surrounded by four iron atoms and two manganese atoms on the faces of the cube.
Got it.
But in octa-2, you rotate the pieces. So now it's surrounded by four iron atoms and two aluminum atoms.
Okay.
And then in octa-3, you shift it again, surrounding the carbon with two manganese, two iron, and two aluminum atoms.
And just simply shifting their positions around that central carbon atom fundamentally changes how the resulting steel bends or breaks.
Entirely.
But, we can't just build every single atomic variation of this Rubik's Cube in the physical lab and test it.
No, because the variables of heat and pressure in a real-world forge are just way too chaotic to isolate perfectly.
So how do we actually find out which cage shape the universe prefers to build?
Well, we have to simulate reality from scratch inside a supercomputer.
Okay, we're playing God in a supercomputer.
Exactly. This brings us to the realm of first principles calculations, or, it's often referred to in physics as ab initio calculations.
Where you just completely abandon physical experiments and empirical guesses.
Right. Instead, you build the atoms in a digital void, relying purely on the fundamental laws of quantum physics. You are mathematically solving Schrödinger's equation to predict the exact behavior of the electrons holding the metal together.
Okay, so instead of pouring molten metal into a physical forge, the researchers are basically throwing this highly advanced digital net over the atoms to catch how their electrons behave.
I like that. Yes. And the specific mathematical net they used is called the all-electron full potential linearized augmented plane wave method, or FLAPW.
Rolls right off the
Oh,
tongue.
yeah, totally. But it is a wildly complex algorithm because in a metal lattice, electrons behave very differently depending on where they are.
Right.
Near the dense nucleus of an atom, electrons act wildly. They're pulled by massive atomic forces.
But in the empty space between the atoms, they drift a bit more smoothly, right? Like waves.
Exactly. So FLAPW uses two entirely different sets of mathematics to calculate both realities and perfectly stitches them together.
And when the author ran these three Rubik's Cube variations through this supercomputer simulation, the results were actually entirely unambiguous.
Completely clear. Octa-1 was the undisputed champion of stability.
Because the supercomputer calculated that octa-1 possesses a negative formation enthalpy of negative 24.8 kilojoules per atom mole.
Right. And for those listening who might not speak native thermodynamics, negative formation energy basically means the material naturally wants to release energy to form this specific shape. It is comfortable.
Yeah, it's the path of least resistance.
Like, imagine a boulder resting at the very bottom of a deep valley. It takes absolutely no effort for it to just stay there.
Right. And the text notes, this makes octa-1 significantly more stable than other known automotive carbides, like Phi-3 LLC.
But what's even more fascinating is how the simulation treated the other two variations, Octa-2 and Octa-3.
Yeah, the math revealed they actually have positive formation energy.
Which is bad.
Very bad. In the strict laws of thermodynamics, positive formation energy means they actively resist existing.
You would literally have to force them into creation against the laws of nature.
Exactly. It's like trying to push that heavy boulder straight up a steep hill.
Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting, and I do have to push back a little on this computer math.
Okay, let's hear it. Because the text explicitly states that to run the FLAPW method, they use something called the generalized gradient approximation.
Yes.
If we are literally feeding mathematical approximations into a digital simulation, how do we know these energy levels aren't just a digital hallucination?
That's a very fair question.
Right. Like, how can we be sure the computer isn't just spitting out a pretty negative number that doesn't actually exist in reality?
Honestly, whenever a physicist uses the word approximation, you should absolutely raise an eyebrow.
Thank you.
Because solving Schrodinger's equation for a multi-atom metal lattice is incredibly difficult. You have to calculate how every single electron simultaneously repels every other electron. It is this infinitely complex, moving puzzle.
So it is an approximation.
It is. But the thesis counters this skepticism using a bedrock rule of quantum mechanics called the variational principle.
Okay, and the variational principle guarantees the math is right.
It mathematically proves that any calculated total energy of a system will always be equal to or greater than the true, actual ground state energy of reality.
Okay, wait, explain that a bit more.
Think of it like trying to guess the lowest point of a dark valley while you're completely blindfolded. You might touch the side of the hill and guess wrong.
But you will never accidentally reach a point lower than the actual bottom of the valley.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. So the computer can be wrong, but it can only be wrong in one direction.
Right. It will always overestimate the energy.
Therefore, if the supercomputer calculates that Octa-1 has the lowest energy state of the three, that is a definitive truth.
Yes.
The true energy in the real world might be slightly lower, but Octa-1 will unequivocally remain the most stable structural cage.
Exactly. The variational principle practically guarantees our digital champion is the real world champion.
That is wild.
But simply knowing Octa-1 is stable is not enough. We really have to know the mechanism driving that stability.
We have to understand why taking out one iron atom from the cage and replacing it with one manganese atom makes the steel incredibly robust.
Right. To understand that, we have to look deeper into the invisible dance of the electrons themselves.
Which means looking at the density of states, or the DOFs, and the band structure of the material.
Yes. Because in quantum physics, electrons exist in very specific energy bands.
Okay.
Imagine the electrons in a metal as this vast microscopic ocean, the surface level of that ocean, where the highest energy electrons sit when the material is at absolute zero.
That's called the Fermi energy level.
Precisely.
And the thesis shows that if you look at pure iron aluminum carbon, which is a kappa carbide cage without any manganese in it, the computer reveals something highly dangerous.
Very dangerous.
It shows these flat D bands sitting right at that Fermi energy level. So why is a flat band on the surface of that electron ocean so dangerous to a car chassis?
Well, a flat band means you have this massive concentration of electrons all crammed together at the exact same high energy level, right at the surface where they are most reactive.
Oh, I see.
They are incredibly sensitive to any external stimulation. So the slightest input of physical stress from the road causes them to shift violently,
making the entire atomic structure fundamentally unstable.
Exactly. It wants to react. It wants to break apart.
So having flat bands at the Fermi level is essentially like trying to balance a heavy bowling ball on a perfectly flat, highly polished sheet of glass.
That's a great analogy.
Right. The slightest microscopic breeze, the tiniest bump in the road, and that heavy ball just rolls away completely out of control.
And the terrifying part is that perfectly flat sheet of glass is exactly where this steel naturally wants to exist.
Unless you introduce the magic of the FECUM and LSC Octa-1 structure?
Yes, because when you substitute a manganese atom into that cage, something miraculous happens mechanically.
Because manganese naturally possesses one less electron than iron.
Right.
And just by removing that single electron from the overall system, the supercomputer simulation shows that the dangerous flat band completely vanishes from the Fermi level.
It just disappears.
So adding the manganese essentially carves a deep mathematical groove into that sheet of glass.
Exactly. It catches the bowling ball and locks the entire atomic system down securely so it just can't roll away. And the stability is really driven by how powerfully the atoms grip each other once that flat band is gone.
What's the data say on that grip?
The data shows strong physical hybridization peaking around negative 3.5 electron volts.
And hybridization is when the electron orbitals of the carbon, the aluminum, and the manganese physically overlap and lock together, right?
Yeah, they're basically holding hands with an incredible amount of atomic force.
And if you mess with that structure, like if you try to force the carbon atom into the octet 2 position we talked about earlier.
Oh, the electron orbitals go completely wild.
Yeah, the thesis notes that the magnetic profile of the metal goes absolutely crazy. The manganese atom's magnetic moment insanely doubles to 3.23 Bohr magnetons.
Wait, really? It doubles?
It doubles.
Wow. And just as a reminder, a Bohr magneton is a unit that measures how strongly an atom acts like a tiny magnet.
Right.
If that magnetic moment suddenly doubles, it means the manganese atom is acting like a wildly overpowered magnet. It's just pushing aggressively against all its neighboring atoms.
It violently rips the structural harmony apart from the inside.
Which mechanistically explains why octa 1 is the only way this material naturally wants to form.
And why it acts as a perfect shock absorber for the steel.
Exactly. We have successfully mapped the optimal quantum architecture to keep a driver safe.
But there is a massive catch to everything we just discussed.
There always is.
All of these quantum calculations, the FLAPW algorithm, the Schrodinger equations, they are mathematically pristine, but they share one glaring flaw.
They're all calculated at absolute zero.
Zero Kelvin, which is roughly minus 460 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right. And families do not generally drive their minivans down the highway in the deep freeze vacuum of space.
Not usually, no. A car engine generates massive heat. The summer sun bakes the asphalt.
We absolutely have to introduce heat into this math to see if the metal structure survives outside of a frozen digital void.
And to test the structural integrity at finite real-world temperatures, the researcher had to shift from pure quantum mechanics to statistical thermodynamics.
Right, they utilized a Monte Carlo simulation, specifically combining the Wang-Landau and Metropolis methods to run a cell gas model.
Let's translate how that actually works for a second.
Sure.
A Monte Carlo simulation essentially uses massive amounts of random sampling. Imagine the computer rolling billions of microscopic dice over and over to predict how these specific atoms vibrate and swap places as they get hotter.
It allows the computer to simulate the completely random, unpredictable chaos of real-world heat energy.
But when the author ran this heat simulation to see how the Octa-1 cage would hold up, they hit a dramatic computational bottleneck.
Oh yeah, the supercomputer literally maxed out its processing limit.
Completely. The simulation software was written in the C++ programming language.
Okay.
And in C++ MA, there is a hard-coded mathematical limit to how large a number the architecture can process.
And what's that limit?
That limit is 10 to the power of 256.
Wow.
Yeah, just to anchor that scale for you listening. Physicists estimate there are only roughly 10 to the power of 80 individual atoms in the entire observable universe.
Wait, really?
Yes. So 10 to the 256 power is a number so incomprehensibly massive, it practically defies the human mind.
And yet, the sheer chaos of simulating heat across this atomic lattice generated a density of states that mathematically exceeded that number.
The software broke down. Because the computer couldn't handle the math of the heat, it essentially gave up on finding the precise measurement.
So what did it calculate?
It calculated an entropy state of about 4.85 joules per Kelvin mole. But the true chaotic reality of the metal heating up, you know, the theoretical configurational entropy, was mathematically closer to 14.90 joules.
Oh, I see. And configurational entropy represents the sheer number of possible ways the atoms can rearrange themselves into a mess as the temperature rises.
Exactly. The computer simply could not hold enough data in its memory to measure the exact chaos of the heat.
We are talking about predicting the behavior of an invisible speck of metal, and the sheer chaos of its heat energy is so mathematically dense, it crashes the hard-coded limits of modern software.
It's unbelievable.
So, does that mean the heat experiment was a failure?
Surprisingly, no. The simulation was still a profound success.
How?
Because it ran long enough and accurately enough to prove one vital fact. There was no sudden phase transition in the high temperature range.
Ah, meaning there was no sudden catastrophic change in the slope of the free energy.
Right. If the Octa-1 material were going to suddenly fail, become brittle, or lose its structural integrity as the car heated up on a summer day, the thermodynamic graph would show a sharp, dramatic angle change.
But it didn't.
It didn't. The line remains stable. This mechanistically proves that even under the extreme stress of heat, the Octo-1 kappa carbide remains robust.
That is incredible.
So to pull all of this together and look at the journey we just took, to make a cargo ship or a family car lighter, more fuel efficient, and capable of sliding its atomic layers to save your life in a crash.
Scientists cannot just mix metals in a pot and hope for the best.
No, they have to zoom down to map the exact octahedral cage of a single carbon atom.
They have to measure the quantum spin of its electrons to avoid flat bands on the Fermi level.
And they have to push supercomputers to the absolute crashing limits of mathematics to ensure the metal bends instead of breaking.
It really highlights the true nature of modern computational metallurgy. We are designing the safety and efficiency of the macro world strictly by manipulating the invisible building blocks of the quantum world.
Which leaves us with a final lingering idea for you to ponder today. Think about the bridge you drive over, or the skyscraper you work in, or the car chassis keeping you safe on the highway.
Yeah.
If simply swapping one iron atom for one manganese atom inside a microscopic crystal can entirely dictate the physical strength, the ductility, and the magnetic profile of a multi-ton vehicle.
What other massive macro world engineering problems are we currently struggling with? They're just sitting there, waiting for a microscopic atomic level puzzle to be solved.
Exactly. If a single trapped carbon atom dictates whether an I-beam rings like a bell or shatters like glass, what else is hiding right in plain sight, just waiting for us to zoom in?